What's up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And on The Stack, we talk about a ton of books that come out this week.
Oh, books!
Let's kick it off with a big one, Ultimate Invasion. Number one from Marvel, written by Jonathan Hickman, art by Brian Hitch. Now, this is the team that, in part, there were other people involved, but in part, helped redefine Marvel Comics about a decade or two ago with the Ultimate Universe. Here, Jonathan Hickman is returning to those ideas, as well as ideas that he left over from Secret Wars and Fantastic Four and other things. And finally, coming back to this universe, he has promised that he is going to come at it a new way. He doesn't think it's worth it to just be like, let's reboot the Ultimate Universe, and there we go at the end. That doesn't make sense. Instead, what is the new story here? However, and mild spoilers here, but this issue is mostly about getting us to that point where the Maker, who is the evil Reed Richards from the Ultimate Universe, is trying to get back to his universe. He takes a little side trip to check out Miles Morales and sees if he wants to come back with him. Also, we check back in with the Illuminati, a group that Jonathan Hickman was a big fan of, who we haven't seen in a good long while, who are fighting against the Maker. So, very much a setup issue here. I think we have a positive and a negative, so is what I'm getting from both of you. Well, Pete, you seem pretty negative about this. Am I wrong?
Yeah, I'm a little bit of a negative Nan.
You've always been a Nan, but to hear negative in front of it, shocking.
Yeah. I mean, I love Brian Hitch's art.
Well, wait, what don't you like about it?
The main character is a complete douchebag. I don't care about this fucking other Reed Richards. I don't care about him doing douche moves.
You don't even like regular Reed Richards.
Yeah, exactly. So, and then he's like, you know, Spider-Man's about to get, you know, I'm spoiling the shit out of this. Spider-Man's about to get hit with a spider, slaps him in the back, grabs the spider before Peter Parker even knows what's going on. So I'm like, cool, we get to watch a douche run around Marvel stopping people before they get their powers. Is that fun? Are people excited about this idea? It's a what if, I don't know, man, like with the douche in charge. Why do I... What's to get excited about?
I forget that you don't even like good Reed Richards, so there's no way you're going to like bad Reed Richards.
Yeah.
I thought you lost me at Reed Richards. I like the Maker as a character. I think interesting. You can tell Jonathan
Hickman. You like scars around the eye? Is that what you're into?
He's got sort of a cable
Yeah,
scar,
exactly.
A very original idea. Oh, you know, different
cable,
people have
the scars. First person who had a scar on his eye. Go ahead, Justin.
Yeah.
The strange part for me is like we don't want the Ultimate Universe. And it's especially they sort of poke the bruise when they're like the Maker goes to Miles and is like, "You want to come?" And it's like, we're all on board with him just being here. Like, don't try to like go back or like you're unraveling a very nice tapestry that we all like. So like it's interesting to be sort of pulling at it a little bit. That's why I'm happy Miles is like, no, I'm good here, and maybe we don't touch that again. The idea that they have to solve a problem where evil the Maker is going to go there and create a world without superheroes where he is in charge, very interesting here for that.
Is that interesting?
Yes, because I bet there'll be some heroes. It's like the recent Avengers run where you had Tony Stark in the Ant-Man armor. And like that to me is interesting. I want to see what that different universe is in a what if way.
But you want to watch an asshole Reed Richards stop people from getting their powers. You think that's enjoyable?
But he's
a couple of things I want to throw out there.
He's a villain.
You do.
What are you mad at Dr. Doom because he's not nice? The Maker's a villain.
Don't bring Dr. Doom into this. Nobody's talking about Dr. Doom.
Why do you like him?
Pete and Dr. Doom are friends, please. That's right. They had drinks the other night. Pete made this whole thing about like, how are you going to shrink through your metal mask? And he's like, oh.
Careful.
Like, I'm getting.
Accursed LePage. Anyway, a couple of things to throw out
Peter,
there.
Peter, I'm in New York. Would you mind joining me for a beer? I'm Latverious. I can't drink there because I'm in charge.
To the point that you're making, Justin, I do think there's an interesting thing here in terms of Ultimate Comics were supposed to reboot Marvel Comics. They didn't exactly do that, but no pun intended here. Ultimately, what they did is influenced the entire MCU. Like, not the entire MCU is directly based on that, but like, you would not have the MCU without the Ultimate Comics. And also, yeah, the ideas and themes and things that went into Ultimate Comics ultimately seeped into the main Marvel continuity once the Ultimate Universe went away. So
stop saying Ultimate.
Why does it come back now? That is something that we don't know in this first issue, which is very much a reiteration and setup of ideas from Hickman.
Yeah.
Of here's who the Maker is. He was in the Marvel Universe. He's got to get back to the Ultimate Universe. We don't know what that means yet. So I actually remain very excited for the second issue in terms of what that does mean, because we haven't seen the invasion part of Ultimate Invasion yet. That potentially means big seismic things going forward, as Hickman has wanted to do. The other thing that I think is really big here that got me very excited is, even though it's relatively subtle, finally settling after years what is going on with Miles Morales. Because when we left off in Secret Wars, part of the point of Secret Wars was to get Miles Morales in the main Marvel continuity.
In his family and his whole world. It wasn't
exactly. And there was no explanation of that. There was no explanation of, like, how are there two Spider-Mans? How is this going on? Why is Miles Morales here? Because Miles Morales' origin is so intrinsically tied to the idea that Peter Parker died and then he became Spider-Man. So who is Miles Morales in this case? I think that's something they're going to explore more over the course of the series as well, particularly because what we establish here is it seems like Miles is aware he's in the wrong universe and is okay with it, which is something that we have never gotten before. So all of these ideas lead to a setup for me that is very exciting, very intriguing, and I'm very curious about the second issue.
Hmm. Okay, just to check in real quick. So, Alex, what you're saying is your favorite part of this comic is when the main bad guy stop what he's doing for a second, just be like, "Yo, Miles Morales, you want to roll with me?" And he was like, "Nah." And you were like, "Oh shit, this is awesome."
This is a question about continuity. I've been a comic book fan for a long time. I don't know if you know about that. And one of the things that we really like about comic books is sort of like plumbing through the continuity and getting those kind of answers there that we've been waiting for. You, as more of a fan of, you like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the cartoon and stuff like that. So you might not be familiar with comic books or anything like that. God. But like, that's the sort of thing we comic book fans, get very excited about. So yes, getting some sort of confirmation about the continuity of Miles Morales is very exciting for me. Also, the idea, the whole exchange there, the way that Brian Hitch draws it and the way that Jonathan Hickman writes it, and mind you, this was in the Free Comic Book Day special, so I've already seen this part, but the thing of Reed Richards being like, the maker being like, I didn't really know it, but I think we're in the wrong universe. And Miles being like, you didn't know that until now? Well, the difference between their memories, that's a really interesting emotional and plot thread that you can follow over the course of this series.
Well, but I also think that, I mean, there's a whole, the maker's aware of the all of the other Reed Richards that meet and have a confab. So I feel like maybe it's a little less obvious to him. But, I mean, it's obvious to Miles because he knows that there's a Peter Parker in this world. So, like, and he also knows, I believe, that there's a Miles Morales in this world who is a bad guy. So I feel like he's aware of those factors in a good way. I'm less interested in poking out Miles' continuity and more interested in the maker, and the idea that the heroes from 616 are going to invade the Ultimate Universe feels very cool. And Pete, I feel like you should like the maker because it's all of your suspicions about the quote-unquote good Reed Richards of the 616 come true.
I also thought it was really weird that nobody cared how easy the maker was able to steal everybody's toys and just peace out with it. And
stealing's easy. They laid it out in the issue that it was very purposeful.
I read it.
Here's the thing. They don't have, like, on all those different artifacts, they don't have, like, you know, in a CVS when they have, like, the deodorant in jail. They don't have that for those artifacts.
Yeah, it seems like
that's harder to steal when the deodorant's
behind. The other thing that I'll throw out there, and then we can move on to the next issue, but I always love a story that deals with, and this is something that Jonathan Hickman hits a lot, but like the sins of Reed Richards. And I think what we're getting at here, when you left off at the end of Secret Wars, Reed Richards and the rest of the Fantastic Four were like, we're going to remake the multiverse. So we're going to kind of remember what the multiverse is and throw it out into the ether. Sometimes, like literally, physically, that's where we're going to end up here. My guess is he didn't remake the Ultimate Universe because that was the last universe that attacked the main Marvel MCU in Secret Wars. And I think what's going to come out here is Maker is pissed about that. He's like, yeah, you made everything else. You remade it so that I'm here, stuck here, and Miles is stuck here. What are you doing? And he writes, I'm sorry, I know you don't like it, Pete, but Jonathan Hickman's writes a really good, oops, I messed up Reed Richards. So that's always a very exciting story to me.
Very exciting. But I will say, in general, I'm ready to not say the word multiverse as much in my life.
Interesting. Well, get ready to say it at least one or two more times over the course of this stack, but let's kick it off first with a non-multiverse, just a dream. It's not a multiverse issue of Wonder Woman in number 800 from DC Comics, written by Becky Cloonan, Michael W. Conrad, and Tom King. Art by Joelle Jones, Aletha Martinez, Mark Morales, Nick Robles, Todd Knock, Skylar Patridge, Cully Hamner, and Jen Bartel, and Daniel Sampere. In the most of the issue, the bulk of the story, we are wrapping up Becky Cloonan and Michael W. Conrad's run here as they pay tribute to the entire history of Wonder Woman, as well as particularly her sidekicks. And then the backup story is Tom King and Daniel Sampere setting up their new run on Wonder Woman. What did you think about this goodbye hello issue?
I thought this was fantastic. You know, we read a lot of like goodbye issues, especially like big like statement issues like this. And Becky Cloonan and Michael W. Conrad have had a great run on Wonder Woman, a nice long run on it. And so many of them are like Wonder Woman deals with all of sort of the touchpoint characters in her world. And we get like really nice emotional versions of that. But what I particularly loved about this is the way that we get her encountering Dream Batman and Dream Superman.
Oh, yeah.
I thought that was, you know, and I'm surprised more of these sort of like reprisal, like looking back issues don't do that because it cements her place in the world. I love this Batman story. Is one of the better Batman stories I've read in a long time, where like she sees him as a kid. She sees I thought that was really cool. The Superman stuff, just really great observations about Batman and Superman from someone who knows them, the character of Wonder Woman. But from a writing standpoint, just really smart writing from them. I just was really, really impressed with this. Great art throughout. And then when you get to the Tom King stuff, super exciting. The idea of completing the Super Sons Trinity with a new Wonder Woman is very smart little area to push into. And she seems like a fun, irreverent character.
Yeah, when you get like a celebration issue like this, you usually get like a bunch of stories. This is a hell of a package. This is really banger stories in here that are very powerful and very well done artistically. It's really impressive. This is like 50 pages of just great Wonder Woman stories. And I was just really impressed from start to finish. You know, you got the Wonder Girl first one was really good. The Batman Dream one really kind of was very enjoyable. So I was just super impressed with this overall. I thought, sometimes you get like a 800 issue or a 700 issue, whatever they're celebrating. It's usually just kind of like showcasing the history, which is great and always fun to go down memory lane. But they really did a great job of not only celebrating the history, but also pushing things forward and getting you excited for stuff to come. So just really impressive as an issue overall.
Question about the Batman scene. Were all the little white like circles on the ground when his parents were killed? Because like I felt like, were they like tapioca balls? Was it like he had a bubble tea or like what's the deal?
It was bat guano. It was a precursor of him fighting the bats.
It was pearls. It was pearls, man.
Pearls. Nice. Ooh. From like they had oysters. They were eating oysters.
Right.
And on the street in Crime Alley.
No.
They barfed them up.
I don't appreciate
Crime Alley oysters, probably not. Great,
that's my
right?
problem, but Crime I'm having Alley oysters. I'm crapping pearls for days, you know?
Wow. Oh my God. I gotta go to the oyster bar. That's a wealthy
Chinaman, number tink, one.
Alex's Crap and Pearl.
From Image Comics, written by Jeff Lemire, art by Andrea Sorrentino. This is continuing the Bone Orchard mythos, which is a spooky horror Halloween thing that they're doing. Anyway, there's a guy with some feathers, and he's in another land. In this issue, there's a bunch of people that live in a tenement together, and they're all connected in strange ways that we don't know about yet. Tell you what, this very much leans into the art of Andrea Sorrentino, and like I always like to say, worth it for the art alone.
That fucker. Is your quote.
You fucking That's, fuck.
Yeah. That, and well, so you guys like are both say, saying... Dude, you guys will say your catchphrases. Yeah, exactly. That's when the action figure line comes out, you'll pull Pete's arm and he'll say, "You fucking fuck." And Alex will say, "Worth it for the art alone."
Yeah, artistically, this is really impressive, especially the panels and stuff like that. Really just very creative. But it's also super creepy. I mean, really fucking creepy. In a way that, you know, Jeff Lemire has a creepiness to his writing that is highlighted really well here by the artist. I was kind of scared reading this.
I like this issue. The Bone Orchard of it all is the part I'm like, wait, oh, yeah, right. And you don't really know what the larger world is. So I like that the Bone Orchard mythos is a tiny part of the title because it, to me, the larger universe is a little bit of a distraction in relation to just a cool story that we're setting up here that is an interesting horror, like ensemble cast comic.
Can I throw you out my biggest problem with this book? My biggest problem with this book is like, it always seems like a good idea to go to the Bone Orchard, but you go there and you come back with so many bones, like so many bones. And you're like, of course I got to do it because I spent the time to go up there. You make a bone pie. Maybe you make some bone sauce or something like that. But ultimately.
I love bone sauce. Here's the thing, Alex. Yeah. You're supposed to go to, humans go to apple orchards. Dogs go to the Bone Orchard.
Yeah.
That is the mistake that I'm making.
Yeah, you're getting up. Didn't you notice when you look around, there's a bunch of dogs on like dates?
Right, with like those little clappy things where you take the bones off the bone trees. I did notice that, but I.
And there's a bunch of dogs with the cones on who work there, and they're like, "Get out of here, man. I hate this.
Get out of my bone orchard.
I planted these bones, and now they're bone trees."
You know, it's funny. Speaking of dog people, let's move on to talk about Wild's End, number one from Boom Studios, written by Dan Abnett, art by I.N.J. Culbert. Now, this is the continuation or parallelization of a series that this team has done before, which it's sort of incidental that they are animal people in this world, but they're sort of like cute. It's not Animal Farm that I'm thinking of, but I'm thinking of something else. Like, what were you going to say, Justin?
The comic that I was thinking of is the stuff that Jason did, the Scandinavian comic book.
Yeah, a little bit like that. So there are these animal people, and if you haven't read the previous books, basically what happens is like they get stuck in the middle of War of the Worlds, aliens attack, like the saucers come down, they start killing everybody. So we've had previous series of this before. This is showing us a new town with new characters that we're focusing on. And spoiler here, but a fishing boat goes out of town as this alien attack happens, and they're catching up with later. Pete, I know this is one of your favorites of the week, so take it away.
Yeah, I just thought it was just really drawn very well. Kind of these adorable animal people, but they have human problems. And I also really enjoyed the back matter and the kind of cool letters and stuff that you got. But it's this kind of thing where they go out to sea, and then when they get back, nobody's there, and they find where somebody was sitting on a bench, and they're kind of like burnt kind of like symbol on the wall, and then they find shoes, but the feet are still in there, so it looks like someone was...
I hate when I do that.
Oh, you hate when you leave your feet still in the shoe? Oh, yeah.
Because it's I don't want to untie them.
So you just cut off your leg? Is that what you do?
I just really pull really hard. Let me ask you, what animal would you be in this world? Like if you're sort of – because all these animals have their personalities are expressed in their animal, I feel like. So what do you think?
I don't know. What's the angriest animal that you can think of?
Honey badger. You'd be a honey badger, Pete.
Honey badger. There we go.
with no honey.
Yeah.
Alex, what about
you? I was thinking more of a Tasmanian devil, but all right.
I don't know.
Taz spinning around circles the whole time?
Otter, go maybe? Would I be an otter?
I was going to say otter for me. That's so funny. Okay. We're otters and you're a Tasmanian.
You guys are, you guys can float right, in the water and hold hands.
Yeah, nice.
That's right.
And you know, with otters, in our tummy.
Exactly. We'd be shitting pearls all day. Just like real life.
I really like this series.
Yeah, me too.
I was very happy to see it back again. I wasn't sure what to expect given that we had followed it so far, but this is a really cool tale to take these characters, take them out of town and have them figure out what's going on. The art, as always, is absolutely wonderful. The animal characters are very specifically written and drawn. So I like it quite a bit.
I'm glad Boom's doing it.
Glad Boom's doing it. It reminded me of the books that Jason does, which I really love, except less just sad and sort of ennui, drowning in ennui, and much more like chatty and emotional.
The Last Kids on Earth and their superhero alter egos are back in the latest installment of the graphic novel spinoff series, The Last Comics on Earth, Too Many Villains. Jack, June, Quint, and Dirk face their biggest challenge yet, creating the sequel to their hit graphic novel in a mad dash, puzzle-filled race across Apocalyptia to stop the biggest evil plan in history. Hey, you know what the creators of Last Comics on Earth's evil plan is? Make me and my kids love these books. Seriously, my younger kid is a huge fan of both the Last Kid series and the Last Comic series.
It's true.
And now I'm hooked too. The whole team has created a delightful cast of characters with some fantastic kid-friendly art throughout that will appeal to readers of all ages. Buy your copy of The Last Comics on Earth in stores today. You can also visit lastkidsonearth.com to learn more. The Incredible Hulk, number one for Marvel, written by Philip Kennedy Johnson, art by Nick Klein. The Hulk is back on Earth, and this is, I would say, very funny to me in terms of Philip Kennedy Johnson being like, okay, so you know the Immortal Hulk run by Al Ewing, which was like the Green Door and this horror-inflected Hulk, and then they made Hulk into a spaceship in Donny Cates' run and took him on Earth and had him fight all these Hulks in space. Completely forget about the last run. We're just going to follow up directly on the Immortal Hulk run. And like, they do make nods to it. I don't want to like slag it off or anything, but basically, if you liked Immortal Hulk, but were bothered by the more problematic art aspects of the artist on that book, pick this up.
Yeah, yeah, it's got the Green Door. It's very horror kind of focused and kind of really creepy kind of body grotesque kind of stuff going on with the Hulk. Yeah, evil monsters, scary shit, but it's very interesting. I feel like Philip Kennedy Johnson's got an interesting idea here, so I'm excited to see what happens, because there seems to be like a little girl who also has some rage issues, which was nice to see, felt seen, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's nice. So, and that's your daughter in Marvel continuity, right?
Yeah, it seems like it.
Are you talking about the woman in the second half? Because I think that's supposed to be Betty.
Is it?
No, there's the girl.
It seems younger.
Yes, Betty is in there, but there's a girl who's running away from her.
Yeah, she's got a little Captain America backpack on.
Yes.
Yeah. So both occur in this story. I agree. I like the horror focus, and while the Al Ewing run was sort of paranoid sci-fi horror, this feels like more monster.
Yeah.
Body horror, a little more hard H horror. So that's cool. And look, I don't quite understand what Bruce is like, and the Hulk seems to be awful. So I'm curious where we're going to find that line where we can make him the hero in some capacity.
We'll see. They might just lead into making him the monster, whatever it is. This is a good team on the book. This is a good take. I'm excited to follow it. Let's move on to Superboy, The Man of Tomorrow, number 3 from DC Comics, written by Kenny Porter, art by Janoi Lindsay. Superboy, specifically the Connor Kent Superboy, is in space. He has met other genetic abnormalities that he has teamed up with to fight the Dominators that are creating their own evil genetic abnormalities. However, this issue, Superboy is finding out things are a lot more complicated than he expected. He thought they were simpler. He tried to escape Earth to get away from the other super people. Not quite working out here. I like this book more and more every issue, personally. What about you guys?
Yeah, agree. It feels like it's approaching almost Legionnaires, mm-hmm. Those great runs from the past. with Superboy as the focus, which I think is, while Superboy constantly joins the Legionnaires, this is a different Superboy joining a different team. I like it. I like that it's an outsider story, that Superboy's like, you know, I just don't have a place on Earth right now, so I'm going to come up here, mess some things up, and maybe make some friends.
Yeah, the reason I would disagree with you a little bit, respectfully, Justin, is it feels like it's a little bit like Legionnaire, but it feels a little bit more heart. There's like a little bit more heart behind it instead of it just kind of being like just a people. I also think that, I don't know, I really think that this is just such a great run. I love the kind of tone, the art set, you know, sets. It's got this young kind of 90s feel. Yeah, yeah. I just feel that, like, it's nice to see Superboy kind of enjoying himself, you know, having fun with the team. I'm a little worried because it looks like he dies at the end there, you know? So, and I noticed that.
It's too bad.
Yeah, yeah, it's too bad because I feel like it's, I want more. And what's weird is I noticed that like a lot of the DC books are just kind of, it just seemed like we had this kind of beat of like, are we just going to have somebody die at the end? So I was a little kind of like, what? What's going on in DC with just killing people off in the last panel? But, yeah, I'm excited for more of this. I'm having a great time with it.
Curious what other books you're talking about. Maybe a coincidence. And also, we're setting up a big, like, horror crossover.
Tales of Suspense, number one from Image Comics, written by T.P. Louise and Chris Ryle. Art by Ashley Wood and Nelson Danielle. This is an anthology title from our friend Chris Ryle, who we know from Lock and Key and other things.
Oh, yeah.
These are two very different stories here, but I'll throw out that the backup story for Chris Ryle and Nelson Daniel is so funny. It is.
Yeah, I loved it.
Yeah.
Oh my God. It is like this wizardy hero guy who gets the shit beat out of him.
Yeah. Over the course to the point of where he's like, I need to do magic so no one looks at me weird because I just got fucked
oh
up.
Oh my God.
His name's Dreamweaver.
Yes. And it's set up as like this, I'm a Doctor Strange type character. By the end, he's like spewing blood everywhere. So funny. Completely contrasted with the Fudge story, which reading that story, legit, I was like, put this in an art museum. This is art.
Thank you. Yeah. Holy cool ass artistic art. I mean, this is just some really impressive stuff. It really contrasts the funny story, which I think is a great kind of 1-2 punch where you have something that's so artistically kind of driven and then something that's just kind of more humor driven. But man, just, it's a hell of a package. And, yeah, I was just really impressed. I just was like, man, I want these panels on my wall. It's so cool. And touching letters page. And then also you got that amazing pic of Al Jaffe in the back, RIP.
There's a great, just while you're talking about the back matter, sort of a explanation about what split comics are. How back in the day, it was very much like you'll have two very different stories and you'd sort of like getting a little mini variety pack, which launched a lot of new talent, a lot of new characters in the early days of comics. And to do that, I love that. And maybe I'm different than some other readers, but I like just jumping in and being exposed to new stuff. And that's what this comic does in a great way.
Camp Pickens, number one from Archie Comics, written by Jordan Morris, Blake Howard, and Tim Seeley. Art by Diana Camaro, Carol Borelli, and Mike Norton. This is three stories set at Camp Pickens. It's all summer camp horror, Archie style. What'd you guys think about this one?
It's just silly fun. I mean, you got, you know, the bug juice and, you know, curses and murder panels, but it's all kind of done in a kind of joking, artistic way because the art is a little bit more kind of cartoony. It undercuts the kind of murder stuff. You know, I didn't appreciate the Betty and being murdered in a lake, but other than that, I thought it was a lot of fun.
I actually like that story. I liked a lot of these. The bug juice take I thought was really fun. I won't spoil what it was, but like sort of upset expectations in an interesting way. The Veronica one was the one where I was like, I just felt sort of like unnecessarily sad. By the end, where I was like, I just wanted a little more space for the story to, for all of these stories to get to run.
That's one of my big things with all of these anthology books that they've been doing. They're so much fun. And like you mentioned, I think Jordan Morris's story up front, the Bug Juice one, was the best one for me. It is the overarching story that connects everything as they're telling these other two stories. It's fun. It's goofy. It feels very Archie Comics, but dark at the same time. But I want more. Like, I want these to be oversized anthologies, because it always feels like they're rushed at the last page, you know, and all good. Love Tim Seeley, love Mike Norton. Don't know Blake Harrod and Carilla Pirelli quite as much, but these are all really good teams. I want to see these be ongoing or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Better to leave one more, man.
Or if Camp Pickens can be ongoing with just a bunch of stories about camp stuff.
Totally.
Because you could do fun, not always horror. You could do one horror, one like
making some friendship bracelets, going on a canoe. Those are things that happen at camp.
I love going on a canoe because they're wobbly.
That's why you like canoes?
Very
thin. They're wobbly?
They're risky. They're wobbly. Well, it's like a kayak with a friend.
Safer than a submarine. Scarlet Witch Annual number 1 from Marvel, written by Steve Orlando, art by Carlos Nieto. This is pitting Scarlet Witch against Agatha Harkness.
Oh, man.
She's young and hot now. Pete, you're an old chaser. How'd you feel about this?
I don't know what you mean by that, but I was happy Darcy's in this, kicking butt. I love the Agatha.
Sorry, fighting. I should have said wrinkle fucker. Go ahead, Pete.
I also don't know what the fuck you're talking about. Darcy is great.
You love grandmas.
I enjoy a grandma in the comic book sometimes, not all the time.
Outside of a comic book, all times.
Oh, boy. Anyway, Agatha fighting Scarlet Witch is fun. The whole poison tea, Agatha fucking shit up and then ripping out hearts. It's a fun time. Yes, Darcy, art is super tight bananas. This is a great book.
Agatha Harkness has been a Marvel character forever as a very old, a witch who was around, I want to say, back at the Salem witch trials, or like just an ancient witch. So yeah, the first thing they see her,
like, man, you look great for being so old.
Yeah. And she just revamps it up a little bit, which I think is fun, though. Steve Orlando is really crushing it on this title. I like the sort of twists and turns we get here and where it ends up. I think is interesting. I'm fully on board for this. And thank you, Alex, for coining a term that I'd never heard before.
Anytime. I really like this as well. This is a great one shot. I hope they continue with this whole Scarlet Witch owning a shop with Darcy as long as they possibly can, because it's such a fun concept. And it's
great team. Well.
It's weird to me that they were like, we're going to give you a young Agatha Harkness, but not actually make her look like Catherine Hahn. Like, I feel like, I don't know. Just take the extra step. It's okay. You made Darcy look like Darcy. Just go for it. It's all right. We'll be happy with it, but it's fine. It's not a big deal.
Yeah. I wonder what the rationale there is. I think they're just like, we'll go most of the way, but not all the way, I guess.
Yeah. Let's move on to what I know was one of Justin's favorite issues of the week. Yes. Nightwing 105 from DC Comics, written by Tom Taylor, art by Bruno Redondo. This issue, I'm going to spoil the title of it at the end because it kind of explains what it is. But the title of the issue is You Are Nightwing, and it's all a POV issue where you get to see all the panels from Nightwing's perspective.
Come on.
He goes on an adventure with Batgirl and a bunch of villains that he has to rescue. Justin.
Justin, do you feel like you have DC's ear? Do you feel like they were just like, man, this Justin guy has been talking about
being Nightwing.
You know,
yeah, riding along.
Yeah, like you got to feel so happy.
I love this comic. I love this issue. The more we can spend time with Dick and Barbara, the better. Their relationship is so hot. It's so sweet. It really is. They're out there fighting crime. I love she like almost flies off the train when they're jumping the train there. And he catches her. They're the best couple in comics. And I love watching their adventures. I want to see that go on and on, the way they sort of flirt with each other throughout it. I love it. The POV thing is so interesting. I haven't really seen that done before. It's so cool, especially for a character and a comic that is in its absolute prime right now.
Pete? Yeah, I just think this is a blast of a comic. It continues to be a blast. The art is just so great. I love the style. Love all the action. They're doing an unbelievable job with this relationship. They're just killing it. Absolutely killing it.
Definitive Nightwing. This is going to go down as the run on
one
Nightwing.
Of the best DC comics on the stands right now.
I miss Bruno Redondo's art so much on this book. The Titans.
This art is fantastic on this book.
That's what
I literally just said.
How can you miss it when it's right here?
The Titans arc that happened right before it did not have Bruno Redondo art. And as much as I liked the Titans arc, it didn't have the same sort of groundbreaking visual innovation that you get when Tom Taylor and Bruno Redondo are working together. And that's what I was so excited to see here. I know it takes time. I know maybe Bruno Redondo can't turn around a groundbreaking issue every month out of the gate. But
yeah, this would take some thinking.
Absolutely. But like,
worth the wait.
It's worth it. It's absolutely worth it for the art alone, like I always say. There,
And I believe Pete, you fuckity fuck. I think is what you usually respond.
Speaking of worth it for the art alone, I Hate Fairyland number 6.
Oh God!
From Image Comics, what is happening here? Written by Scotty Young, art by Brett.
Take my
Bean.
Job, I'll take yours, motherfucker.
Pete's in a rush. Issue. He's got a date with a very old woman.
Not denying it. He just laughed. In this issue, Gert has finally made it back to Fairyland. That's where she's been heading to, and the people who run Fairyland are like, "Oh man, Gert is back. She's the worst. What do we got to do about this?" And that's big spoiler here, where we go into the Gertiverse by the end of the issue. I love this book. It's so fun. It's just an enjoyable goof of a book that is just devoted to bits and violence and jokes, and that's pretty much it.
And they, like, I actually liked the use of time travel and sort of multiversal touchstones here. I thought it was fun. It gave the story just a little bit of, like, heft to it in a way I think it needed at this point.
Yeah, I mean, this comic is a mother fluffin' blast. I just love it. It's just so
puff the fluff.
Amazingly written, amazing last page. Everybody on this project seems like they're having a blast. One of the lines, what in the muffin fluff is that? I just, this is just, it's adorable and gross at the same time. It's just really impressive what they were doing in this comic. And then the fact that they kind of like went back and are doing even better is just so impressive.
Victory number 1 from Dynamite, written by David Walker, art by Brett Weldelli. In this issue, we're spinning it out Vampirella, I believe, where we have a character who has a magic ring. Not 100% sure, but she's been pursued by a bunch of demons. Tell you what, the art is great in this book.
Yes.
I was trying to pinpoint who it reminded me of, and for the life of me, I can't come up with it. But as usual with Dynamite, forget about the cheesecake covers. It has literally nothing to do with that inside of the book. It's basically like a Fast and the Furious thing where she's being chased by a bunch of demons in a car. Very fun. I really like this a lot.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. The cover really turns you off to this idea of the TNA that is kind of presented. So if you can get past the cover, the inside is just so impressive, the character design. I was going to say like almost a Cliff Chang because of the thickness of the lines.
Oh, that's a good call.
But I love the great balance of action and story in this. I want to read more. I'm really impressed by the team on this, and just stop fucking making it bad with the covers.
But I think the story inside, like, is definitely worth it. Like, they're going to do what they're going to do on the covers. But, like, the mythology that they're developing here is really interesting. And, like Alex said, it's just a fun, action-oriented story. I love the way the demons are drawn. Very fun.
The Avengers number 2 from Marvel, written by Jed McKay, art by C.F. Villa. In this issue, we're picking up at the cliffhanger where Captain Marvel met a very injured Kang. And in this issue, he says, "Hey, I need your help." They say, "Why would we want to help you?" And he said, "I'll help you save 1,000 people in the next 24 hours. And if you do that, I'm going to ask for your help." And that's what happens over the course of this issue. I know we felt pretty good, I think. You felt very good about the first issue of Avengers. How are we feeling about issue number 2?
I feel like the things we talked about were that it felt like a very boilerplate Avengers first issue. It was like, let's bring this team together. And the team was basically the team that was in the Avengers right before this book launched. So it wasn't a big swing. But I think what we're getting in this issue is the swing. It is what was happening. And I love Kang just dropping, like, here's all the bad shit coming your way. And then the first one is in orbit at the end of the issue. I'm like, let's go. Is the vibe coming off this? I was like, yes, I like this. I think all the characters are being used really well. I like everybody doing, having their own little mission and seeing them being the Avengers they're going to be in this book. Fully on board with the Jed McKay takes.
Yeah, I agree, Justin. I thought this was really impressive. I love the action. The Black Panther stuff was great. Also, Captain America is great in this. He can drive a truck. He loves Marvin Gaye. I mean, who doesn't? Great. I mean, completely true.
You could get it behind an 18-wheeler, you think?
What, me?
Yeah.
No, I couldn't just walk up and just all of a sudden drive a truck.
Oh, I thought you said who? I think your quote was, who couldn't do this?
No, I was talking about Marvin Gaye. Who doesn't love Marvin Gaye?
Oh, I got you.
So it's just true statement.
We should do a long haul truck. We should start
we're doing a long haul truck.
It would be fun podcasting while driving. Yeah, that doesn't sound tense at all.
Honk, honk. Yeah.
Who's driving? If somebody else is driving and maybe we're in the back of the truck doing the podcast, that could be fun.
Like we're being held hostage in the back of the truck and somebody's driving us to an undisclosed
location. No.
Or if the truck slows down and we stop podcasting, we die? Like speed, but for podcasting?
Speed, but for podcasting.
That's sometimes what I feel like doing the show. Why don't we move on in that case and talk about Titans number 2 from DC Comics written by Tom Taylor.
When we turn 60, we got to stop doing the podcast?
No, we die is what that means. 60. That's what that means.
But we'll tape it. We'll release that podcast with my last breath. I'll be like, and post. Art by Nicola Scott. This is another big number 2. We talked about coming out of the same week every time. But the cliffhanger at the end of the last issue is the Titans were finally firmly established as this new team, as the preeminent team in the DC universe, except Wally West died.
See, Justin?
As we speculated, though, with the last issue, he didn't die. It was just a future version of himself. Now he's going to have to solve his own murder while they are dealing with a bunch of other threats at the same time. What did you think about this issue?
I like the mystery. I like the Titans history and mythology we're getting into, especially with the stuff at the end that I won't reveal. They set that up really well, I feel like. And the team being like, are we the Justice League? Where's our place? Because I think that's a question a lot of people have about a lot of superhero teams, specifically the Titans. And I like their self-definition. And within the team, each character is also finding some self-definition with each issue. It's just another really well-plotted and paced Tom Taylor book.
Yeah, Tom Taylor is killing the game. But yeah, this is Wally West dies. It's hence what I was saying about all the DC comic books right now.
He died at the beginning.
Yep.
And then he's also alive.
Yeah, but then he's like, but somebody's dead. You know what I mean? And then Garth sees himself on TV. So one of those two have got to go. You know what I mean? But all that kind of...
what are you talking about?
If there's two Beast Boys, one of them's got to go, right? You can't just have...
No, he doesn't see himself on TV. He sees Aqualad or Tempest on TV.
Oh,
Tempest,
I'm sorry. I thought
it's
that was like...
character.
No, my bad.
Yeah. Tempest is Aquaman's former sidekick, who's a sea wizard.
Yeah. So anyways, I just thought that, like, great mix of action.
You ever meet two people named Garth?
Yeah. Also, it's Garth and Garfield. They're both called Gar, but I understand where confusion comes from.
Okay.
Yeah. It's like when you meet a Peter.
Oh, God, I've never. There's only one Pete in my life.
That's sweet.
I can't handle
it. Anyway, good Pete. Book. Let's move on from this because I feel like we're getting stuck here. Arcade Kings, number 2 from Image Comics by Dylan Burnett. This is following a guy with a dragon fruit head who is doing a bunch of fights in real life and also video game fights. Pete, you were over the moon for the first issue. How do you feel about issue number 2?
I'm still loving the shit out of this comic. I love the art style. Love all the action. You're getting the story as well as the action as the battles kind of rage on. You're kind of learning as you go. Ton of fun. Love all the action. And yeah, this is pretty cool.
I'm going to say two things that I think this reminds me of, and maybe they're not meaningful, but this is Cobra Kai meets River City Ransom.
Okay.
Anybody on board with that?
I was hoping you were going to say classic. Mega Man, because the guy with the tomato head reminds
me. He looks like Mega Man.
Dragon
but
fruit.
Sorry, bro.
He looks like a little like Mega Man, but the game that they come out of is all about just like fighting random dudes. In River City Ransom, great classic NES game where you had to fight your way across town to the top of a high school through different gangs with funny costumes.
Yeah, there's a ton of games like that. You know, Double Dragon, Streets of Rage. You know, there's tons of stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but River City Ransom is the fun one.
Let's move on to something that I believe is an actual video game adaptation. Starfinder Angels of the Drift, number 1 from Dynamite, written by James L. Sutter, art by Edu Mena. In this issue, a bunch of things happen. What did you guys think?
I feel like this is a little bit of an homage to Guardians of the Galaxy, but a lot of action, some fun moments, very interesting characters. Cool.
It's interesting that you make a comparison to Guardians of the Galaxy, a book we're going to talk about in, I want to say, 90 seconds. But I also think this is a real direct comparison to something that, Pete, I think I want you to check out, which I know is like a real blank spot in your history, Bucky O'Hare, something that I don't know if you've ever saw or heard
croaking
of.
Croaking some this toads.
This is very Bucky O'Hare to me.
Yeah.
A cartoon from the 90s that, as far as we know, only Pete and I saw.
We've got another minute until the 90 seconds is up. Do you guys want to stay silent or should
keep
we
talking about this book? I mean, I like the story. Like, it's fun. It does feel like a larger world that I'm not aware of and will slowly become aware of, I guess.
If nice.
Still got 50 seconds. Keep riffing.
Why don't you
just go on to the next one, man?
No, man. You said 90 seconds. We got to hit that. We got to hit
that.
We don't.
No, it's very important.
A production team right off mic.
Right. Our producer, who is who?
Who is our producer?
Who is Cowell.
Oh, my God.
Simon Cowell. Famous producer.
Famous podcast
for podcasts.
Yeah. Yeah. Simon Cowell.
He famously loves being off camera producing.
Yes. No, don't put me on the microphone.
Stop. Guardians of the Galaxy number 3.
No, hold on. We still got 15 seconds.
You let sure you don't want another comic in the stack?
Oi, what are you guys thinking?
What are you doing?
I'm doing my Simon Cowell impersonation. Guardians of the Galaxy number 3 from Marvel, written by Colin Kelly and Jackson Lansing, art by Kev Walker. Now, we are following the phenomenon of Grootfall, which has destroyed various planets. We don't know a lot about what is going on here, other than the fact that it's pretty much emotionally destroyed the Guardians of the Galaxy and kind of turned them even a little more into villains than they were before, a little bit heroes. Mm. A little bit of both, to use the phraseology of the movie.
There you go.
And I would say, I know you guys were a little higher on the second issue, but I felt like the second issue was not a misstep, but just sort of went away from the main narrative in a weird way for the second issue for me. We're back on it in a big way in this issue, and I was very much on board. I would say this is probably my favorite issue so far, frankly.
Interesting. Because
favorite issue of the stack or just of this Guardians run?
Favorite issue of any comic I've ever read in my entire
holy
life.
Holy shit. What a
it's
statement
literally
that is.
The best comic that's ever been produced.
The thing, because for me, I want to know more about what's up because the characters aren't talking about it.
Well, it's this app where you can text people, you know.
WhatsApp? Yeah. I want to know more about WhatsApp.
No, Pete uses an app called WhatsApp.
So you can just say what's up to strangers?
Yeah, you just go sup.
Yeah, you can't connect. You're literally not allowed to connect to your friends. You can only connect to strangers.
It's like the worst dating app.
Yeah, I agree.
As soon
love
as you become friendly in any way with people that you're in contact with, it cuts off contact.
I love this comic. The Groot stuff was heartbreaking. Got me in the feels a little bit. I also love the line by Drax. I will teach these hilarious idiots the meaning of glory. That's how I feel about you guys. Wow. The art is super tight bananas, and I hope kill Groot.
I want this to just active. It feels like the story isn't activating yet, and it's like space western. I think that's fun, but I just want to like really get in there and know what's happening. Maybe the introduction of Rocket in the next issue will help to do that. So I'm still I like a lot of the ideas here. It just feels like the story is not telling it. Self to us yet, and I'm ready for it.
I think we're going to get that at like issue 6, right, or something.
That I guess
eventually they're going to jump back and show it, but we'll see. Number 5 from DC Comics, written by Joshua Williamson, art by Jamal Campbell. In this issue, Banshee and Jimmy Olsen are in love.
Yeah! However,
yes, love it when a shouty lady dates a journalist, dude. The Banshee has been amped up and her powers driven a little crazy by the villains in the book, who are Lex Luthor's villains in particular. I've got on record with every issue about really loving this run. Like the art from Joel Campbell is impeccable. Yes. Joshua Williamson is really leading into his horror roots and the things that work with him. And I love the relationship between Lex Luthor and Superman. Do you guys feel the same or do you hideously disagree?
I don't hideously I disagree. That's not my favorite part about the I've never liked Jimmy Olsen. This is the first time I liked him. Seeing him fight for love was just so great.
Jetpack for love.
Yeah, and stepping up to Superman and being like, "Yo, back off! I love this woman." Was amazing. I really had a great time with this. Yeah, and crazy last panel, looks like spoilers, but Lex Luthor is dead now. They're killing off a lot of people in DC is all I'm saying. There's some amazing covers. I felt like this was such a cute couple and really well done. It's I was having a blast with this issue.
Really staged drama here. The idea of these bad guys who are trying to kill Lex. So Lex and Superman are working together to figure this out. Send Banshee to kill Superman's super hearing. Superman then has a great date night out with Lois and Jimmy and Silver Banshee. Siobhan, that's really cool. While at the same time, we're cross-cutting between because Superman can't hear Lex being shivved in jail.
Got shivved in jail, dude.
It happens. And the end line, Superman saved me from Lex. Just like amazing, like really amazing.
That
work.
Hits
and
you, dude.
Yeah. I feel like
Lex Luthor
title,
crying out, "Superman save me." With his last
tiny voice.
Dying
He's using
breath,
tiny
dude.
Voice.
Yeah.
He's dead, dude. I feel like this book isn't getting a lot of shine and I wish it got more because I think it really is doing well.
Rogue Son, number 13 from Image Comics, written by Ryan Parrott, art by Abel and Marco Renna. In this issue, we're continuing to deal with the fallout of the fact that our main Rogue Son's body has been taken over by an old dude from the Middle Ages who was the previous Rogue Son. We're also getting some big mythology and mic drops here by the end of the issue. As probably the big fan of Rogue Son on the podcast in
this
particular.
This is your book.
This is my book. I was disappointed. It's probably too strong a word, but most of the book I was like, all right, this is an issue of Rogue Son. They do a good job of like crazy breaking the format in wild ways, but there's a lot of setting up that goes out in the first half of the issue that pays off in wild ways by the end of the issue. And that last page is absolutely killer. So
yeah,
I loved it.
Yeah.
Killer. No pun
it's
intended.
Good. Like you definitely love this book the most. And I think this is definitely like one of the more like serviceable parts of the Massiverse. I don't get as excited for this book, but I do think this issue did a good job of building us up to a final reveal that felt like it made some of the previous issues worth it.
This continues to be a great comic. The art is super tight bananas. Love the story. Love the action. Fantastic last panel. More please. Thank you.
Let's move on to one that I'm very curious to hear Pete's take on in particular, though also Justin's take, of course. Godzilla. Nope.
If you want to talk to Pete, then you're going to have to talk to Pete about it. I'm out.
Godzilla, Here There Be Dragons, number one from IDW, written by Frank Thierry. Art by Inaki Miranda. This is basically a bunch of pirates traveling to Godzilla's island. Pete, take it away.
Yeah, I mean, you had me at Frank Thierry. This is just Here There Be Dragons.
That
hilarious.
Was several words in. I didn't have you at Godzilla or Here There Be Dragons or...
Well, okay, IDW, yes, you had me at Godzilla.
I love when things are written.
You had him. You had him.
Yeah, you just had me. All right. Yeah. IDW, yes. Godzilla, Here There Be Dragons, funny title. Great. But also what I realize is the Here There Be Dragons is a little tip of the cap to the fact that there are pirates in this one. We have a fun crossover of pirates and Godzilla. I just think, I've never seen that before. So this is cool. You know, you got Godzilla on gold doubloons. You don't get to, like a lot of things, you don't get to see Godzilla till the end, but, totes worth it. Totes worth it. Godzilla book. Yeah, I'll be there.
How old is our guy Godzilla? Has he been around?
Oh yeah.
He's been around the block.
I feel like let's
scales don't crack, bro. He looks young as ever.
He does. You think this is a younger, more like teenage Godzilla who's just trying to like date like a much, much older woman?
I'll tell you why. My one problem with the book, I love the idea of pirates versus Godzilla. Very fun idea. Yeah. The execution of just like a pirate being like, give me rub it. I'll tell you this story.
Yeah, exactly.
Godzilla.
I love it. He's like, rub now, please. Yeah. Can you rub me, please? When do I get that rub?
Good across the board. Pete, I know you're going to yell at me when I say this, but that last page reveal of Godzilla is the old school Toho Godzilla.
Hell yeah!
And the way that he pops up in the art, he's like, hey! It looks like he's just like, his eyes are so wide, and he's like, I'm excited to see you guys!
Yeah.
When it should
I'm
be
here!
A,
Welcome to Monster Island!
Yay! It should be a scary monster Godzilla. That's
no, dude, going old school Godzilla is great.
Is it...
Yes.
Why is he so mad at these pirates? Is it because they're near his island?
Yes.
He's much bigger than the island. I don't know how he lives there.
Yeah, where's his house? Are we going to see Godzilla's house in this book, Pete? Defend yourself.
I don't know. Usually it's underwater.
Oh, he doesn't live in like a volcano or something?
Yeah. He'd like to be under the sea Godzilla's garden in the shade.
Mm-hmm. That's one thing about Godzilla. Like, I feel like he changes sizes a lot depending on the movie or the comic or whatever. And it's like, he's
like,
that big?
That's like any character.
No, most humans stay the same size. Who changes sizes?
Did you read that issue of Spider-Man where he was 50 feet tall for no reason? Not good.
I did.
But emotional.
Fing Fang Foom changes shape and size depending on who's doing the art.
Yeah, this is like Godzilla. I want to see Godzilla like signing the Constitution. I want to see him Magna Carta.
So you want Forrest Gump, but Godzilla is what you're saying?
That's what I'm saying. Give me that Gumpzilla. That's the Zilla I want.
I'll tell you what, a Godzilla-themed restaurant would make a lot more sense than a Forrest Gump-themed restaurant, so I'm all in for it.
How dare you? Have you even eaten there lately, Alex?
I have.
Lately.
That was a trap, Alex. That was a trap, Alex. The fact that you just admitted to that is the biggest burn.
You went to Times Square the other day, and you were like, ooh.
I eat there every day. You guys know this.
Yeah.
Every day I go into Forrest Gump. I do the trivia on Forrest Gump.
I go into Forrest Gump.
Whatever the restaurant is. I call it Forrest Gump. They know what I'm talking about. I'm like, give me my regular bucket.
I'd like to meet Forrest. Is Forrest here? I'd like to meet him.
They're like, yes, eat your bucket. And then
I'll have my Gump bucket and a soda. I could like to submerge myself in Coca-Cola. Is that possible? There's my Gump. Yes.
I would like to rest my aching feet each in a ice cold Coca-Cola while I have my bucket of shrimp. Hallows Eve, number four from Marvel, written by Erica Schultz, art by Michael Dowling. In this issue, Hallows Eve, who gets her power from spooky Halloween masks, loses those spooky Halloween masks. I continue to really enjoy the series way beyond where I thought I would. The creative uses they find for the masks are very impressive. Justin, I can see you're shaking your head. Yes.
I agree. I love this series. There's no reason this series should be this good, but it's really thoughtfully made. The way, right from the jump in the first issue where Halsey puts on a werewolf mask, becomes a werewolf, bites someone, he becomes a werewolf when she's like, oh no, I've cursed this. I don't know how these masks work. And in this issue, she finds a resolution to it in a way that I was like, that's really cool. I did not expect that to be the solution. And I want more of this. I would read this ongoing. This is one of the best Spider-Man adjacent characters to be created in quite some time.
I agree. Every time I see this in our stack, I'm like, why is this not coming out in October? This feels like it would just do so much better. But then I read it and I'm like, this is so cool. This is so much fun. The art is really fantastic. I love the creativity behind her using her powers and when she does it. It's just, it's really impressive what this book is doing. I keep, every time I open this, I'm like, got my arms crossed. And every time by the end of it, I'm absolutely in love again.
Wow. It's like you're hugging an older woman. It's like you're hugging an older woman. Well, it's tough. It's tough when your name is a date, you know, Hallows Eve. Like, what if your name is Arbor Day? You'd be like, oh, this sucks.
I dated a girl named Thanksgiving for a while. That relationship was a real turkey. Moving on, Cyborg.
Dad joke. Oh, that guy is too dead. He's technically a dad.
I love how that ramped up. You were like, I did a girl's Thanksgiving. I did a turkey. Bye bye.
Cyborg number 2 from DC Comics, written by Margaret Hampton, art by Tom Rainey. Now, Cyborg is sort of back to basics, except for the fact that his dad has died and now might be inside an android body. That's the big mystery that we're dealing with this issue. I know we were a little mixed on the first issue of this, but how'd you feel about issue number 2?
I really like this. This is an interesting idea of a Cyborg having to deal with dad Cyborg, because dads are stressful enough as is, but then you got your dad with a new technology and you got to like walk him through it over the phone. It is a nightmare scenario. So I do think this is a creative idea, all jokes aside, and I really appreciate the what's happening. I think this is an interesting idea. I love the art. This is cool.
It's a smart choice to sort of put Cyborg's relationship with his father as like an essential part of the character. It's like a core part of the character and how that's complicated. And he's almost his enemy, his like greatest enemy in some ways, but he still loves him. To sort of give them the Firestorm treatment, where they have to literally be roommates inside of Cyborg's brain, is really smart. And I did not expect, I'm not a huge Cyborg guy, but this series is bringing a really smart take on the characters and the sort of relationships that he has.
Terror War number 3 from Image Comics, written by Saladin Ahmed, art by Dave Acosta, that takes place in a world where these nightmares come to life and there's certain people with brain bullets that can fight them. We are dealing with the fallout of the last 2 issues, where our team that we've been following is sort of on their back legs, and they get a new lease by the end here, which is really going to potentially change the game and opens up a lot of the mythology of what's going on in this book. What did you all think of issue number 3?
Yeah, this is great art. You know, you got this rich, empowered lady threatening this dude into working for her. I think this is an interesting story. I'm enjoying this, and I will read more.
How nice. I struggle to hold this whole story in my hands when I'm reading it. It's like I don't know exactly what's happening in the outside world, and then it feels a little bit like these teams are fighting, like you see in other comics. So I'd be the way it ends feels like it's turning a page, a love page, into something else. So I'm curious where that's going to go. But yeah.
Yeah, I agree with that. I was a little more into the first 2 issues than I was this issue. This one felt like you're saying, I lost track of the narrative a little bit, but also, like you're saying, it got it back on track by the end here. So still eagerly looking forward to issue number 4. And the art from Dave Acosta is great. Like, all the nightmares in particular are pretty awesome. Oh, yeah. The characters are really well drawn. So good book. The Vampire Slayer number 15 from Boom Studios, written by Sarah Galley, art by Kath Lobo. We are getting very close to the end here of this rebooted continuity for Buffy the Vampire Slayer as the gang is going up against Drusilla. And we're starting to bring all of the threads together from all across the entire run. I continue to be a very big fan of this series and how it captures the tone of the characters that I know and love very well in a new and fresh way. I know every issue we've talked about how I'm like, I love this. And you guys are like, I'm glad you love that. But
yeah, that's how I feel. That's how I feel about all of our loves on this podcast. Any we talked about earlier today, right now, and the one that you're talking about, Alex.
Okay. I agree. I mean, I was reading this being like, man, Alex is having a great time. I thought the splash pages with the adorable art was fantastic. It's, you know, moving these Buffy people in the right direction, and it's exciting how it's building up.
And I'm not a huge Buffy person, but I do like this book. I feel like this book has given me all of the insight I need into all the characters and their individual relationships, which I think are different from the relationships in the Buffy series. So that's cool. And we're getting to the end. It feels like literally in this issue, they're using every bit of information that's come before. So it definitely
it's really
like,
buffing it up. You know what I mean? It's really building to the buff, and it's great.
What did you think, you Buffy fucker?
I Am Iron Man, number 4 from Marvel, written by Maroa Yodley, art by Dylan Akande. This is a anthology, I guess, where every issue is showing us a different adventure from throughout Iron Man's history. This has been a fantastic series so far. We're getting another issue here where it wasn't 100% clear to me, but I think it was set at like the post-Civil War era was what I was kind of getting from it. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but whatever it is, another fascinating, really, really well done and beautifully drawn issue of this book.
Well, you're right. It is beautifully drawn. There's some really kind of tripped out, amazing stuff going on. And it's, you know, Tony Stark is kind of losing his mind here. He's asking all these superheroes, like, do you see this? Do you see these things? And it seems like only Tony Stark is seeing them. So it's kind of crazy to watch him struggle with his sanity while this comic kind of goes on. But just incredibly drawn monsters, just so beautiful. You know, Doctor Strange is there trying to help him. I mean, I think this is really worth it for the art alone, to coin somebody else's phrase. But I do think that I like also what's happening, you know what I mean? And what they're kind of building towards.
I agree. I agree with all that. One thing about this issue, I wanted Tony and Doctor Strange to be like, hey, real quick, why do we look like twins? Why are we straight up identical to each other right now?
Related at all? Or
like they have this down to the same facial hair at this point. Like, what's happening here?
I think if they were to answer that, they'd be like, it's because artists have a limited amount of time to draw us and a limited vocabulary, so it's two white men with goatees. Let's go.
Well, but, I mean, they do look, I don't know, that they look alike.
Doctor Strange has stripes of gray on his side and a goatee. Iron Man has a goatee, but no stripes of gray on his side. Reed Richard has no goatee, but the stripes of gray. They're three entirely different people.
Very different. Tony getting older. Maybe he's going gray.
Just watch out. Very confusing. I hope it never happens.
Or Reed will grow a little rubber goatee.
The Vigil, number 2 from DC Comics, written by Ram V, art by Lalit Kumar Sharma. This is a Black Ops team of superheroes, operate out of India, I believe. And we talked about this a little bit with the last issue, but even more apparent here in this issue, this feels like a lost Wildstorm book to me, down to the art style, down to the execution of the action. Which doesn't mean I don't love it, because I'm loving reading it, but it feels like a book that came straight out of the 90s or 2000s.
Agreed, though I would put it more like it reminded me of books that came out from DC during Zero Year, the 0 hour event, like this, like was right next to like Primal Force, if you remember that, with like Red Tornado. I love that era because they took a lot of weird swings then. That's where Starman came from. I think The Ray spun out of that. One of my favorite runs in comics is The Ray that Joe Quesada was doing the art on, was right around then. But this is, I like this. These are all new characters that I haven't, we've only encountered a couple times in the lifetime spanning Lazarus event, is where we first met them, I believe.
How dare you?
This, I like the kid, very well drawn, well designed character. I like that this is a team that's a rogue team that's also going rogue individually against the team that is also rogue. So it's rogue on rogue on rogue.
Yeah, everybody loves a little rogue on rogue on rogue. It was a little weird how they were like, hey, kid, don't use your powers to kill these people. Let me do that. maybe look away. I'm going to kill, like, everybody in the room.
It just lightly electrocutes them, which we've all been there.
Well, it was weird that there was, like, they made that character a kid and then were just like, I don't know. It was just weird to me. I was like, tell that kid to, you know, cover his eyes or something. You're just straight up electrocuting a room full of people in front of a child. That's going to have some trauma.
Like he has like half of a boombox for a head, so who knows what he's looking at.
Mm-hmm. He's probably looking at some sweet mixtapes. Scar number 3 from Dynamite, written by Chuck Brown, art by Trevor Fraley. This is continuing the prequel series leading up to The Lion King, and in this issue, Scar tries to recruit a couple of hyenas and has become... He's successful. He gets 3 hyenas to team up with him.
Famously, the same hyenas from The Lion King.
Oh, man, what are the odds?
Right? I'll tell you, I've been really enjoying these Disney.
You love this.
No, I do like this.
That's what I'm saying.
This was the issue where I feel like you guys have mentioned this before, but this is really started to feel like a prequel march to me in a certain way, even though I like the art, even though I like everything. The previous issues more felt like, okay, we're telling a story of Scar.
Yeah.
This is the one where I'm like, we're just filling in gaps.
Lining it up. Yeah, it's all. Lining it up. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, but
I like the way, mind you.
The way they explore the hyena elephant graveyard culture, I was like, oh, really busting out different aspect. But if you remember, the scene they're building up toward is where all of the hyenas march in straight up Nazi goose stepping while Scar is singing his song. So I don't know if that's really my favorite part of the Lion King mythos.
Potentially. I guess we'll see what happens, but this is still well done. If you're curious about it, it definitely feels like a lost direct to video Lion King prequel movie.
Dark,
well done.
Yeah, it's darker, and I like the art style because it's kind of like taking the Disney art and just kind of making it a little darker, a little bit more emo. But yeah, unfortunately, the kind of the fun that was happening is a little bit kind of deflated because this is just, you know, lining it up, not lining it up, but, you know, just kind of setting things
now
up.
Who's the daddy now?
Lining it up.
Who's exactly. The daddy now?
Yeah.
All 8 Eyes, number 3 from Dark Horse Comics, written by Steve Fox, art by Piotr Kowalski. This is following the story of giant spiders that are attacking New York in the 90s, and nobody knows about it, except for 2 men who are going to take them spiders down.
Pete. Let's hope so, because this shit is fucking giant spiders in New York City. This. Like, no, please stop. Stop. I have enough nightmares on my own. I don't need other things adding to them. But all that being said, this is a cool story. I love all the action. They're doing a good job of getting us just a little bit of enough of a story to kind of slowly kind of piece this thing back together. But it does creep me the fuck out.
They say you swallow 8 giant spiders a year and you like really have to chew them. So that's like sleep chewing.
I don't want to think about.
Well, don't. But the hairy little bristles going down your throat.
Oh, Pete talk off his headphones, so don't tell him about how he slurps on them egg sacks.
Give me all eight of those legs. Sick frog legs. It's a delicacy.
This is really good. This feels like a movie that back in the day would have, I mean, obviously it's not a movie, but like there would have been a movie version with Kurt Russell being like, I'm gonna kill those spiders.
Great call. And honestly, I really like this book. Mm-hmm. This book is really giving us that They Live 80s horror movie where it's extra horrifying. The characters are all like on the edge of just being psychopaths. And I think it's really good. The art really matches that style. One of my favorite reads of the week.
I was I've liked this more every issue, and I was straight up disappointed when I read that next issue was the last issue of this.
What?
So, yeah, that's when you know, like, you're in a book where you're like, oh man, no, I wanted this to be ongoing. I want more. I want to see these visions they have of spiders taking over New York. So maybe we'll get a sequel. I guess we'll see what happens. And that is it for the stack. If you'd like to support the show and all the shows we do, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Facebook and YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about comic books. Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show at Comic Book Live on Twitter, Comic Book Club Live on TikToks and Instagram, the TikToks.
TikToks.
The TikToks. ComicBookClubLive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the comic book shop.
Don't put this in, but there's a spider right on the pizza glasses. It's right on the edge of your glasses. Just knock it off before it gets in your mouth or nose or in your eye. Nothing.